Welcome to this week's Two Men in the Middle. This is where two men from the Midwest get together and talk about politics and current events. I'm Craig Huey.
I'm Brandon Koenig.
Last week, we were wondering when the Omarosa show was going to stop and what could possibly bounce Omarosa out of the headlines. Well, I guess we found out.
That train derailed quite a week.
So it's Wednesday, 5 o'clock-ish when we're taping this. Yesterday, the alerts start popping in on the phone. I start getting texts from various people. Hey, Michael Cohn, something about a plea deal coming out. As soon as that story started to develop, here comes the Paul Manafort plea in. And those two just kind of hit at the exact same time.
The plea deal dovetailed with the verdict in the Manafort case, so there was so much to digest at one time. And, it was, I think, pretty revealing in terms of, you know, there can't be any doubt that there were crimes committed. You know, we have that confirmed now. And then I think most problematic for the president, even more so than Manafort, is Michael Cohn, because he directly implicated the president.
Yeah.
And his plea deal.
I think that's the biggest part, that in his plea deal, in open court and on the record, he basically said, I committed campaign finance fraud at the
direction
of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
There's no other way around that. So let's take each of these kind of separately, and let's start with Manafort first, because Manafort to me is the most interesting part of this has been Trump's reaction to the Manafort guilty court case. I got to warn everybody. I already told Brandon today. I'm struggling putting four words into a sentence together. So if you hear a lot of me just pause and Brandon picks up, that's because I think I'm suffering from some sort of news channel overload, trying to process too
cognitive
much data
overload, cognitive
or
dissonance,
my brain's finally just
like
telling
that.
Me I've had enough. I just can't process anymore. But the conviction of Manafort on 8 of 18.
Yes,
so
let's remind our listeners, those charges. So he was convicted on bank fraud, tax fraud, and concealing foreign bank accounts.
And he was basically, they could not reach a verdict on 10 charges. And most of those were the things where Rick Gates was kind of directly involved.
Right.
I think how this broke down is where it was just paperwork. And basically there was a paper trail that said Manafort did this. They convicted on that. When it was something that you had to believe Gates on, they struggled to kind of reach a verdict on those charges.
Right. Some of those charges were duplicative too. So they were redundant. Yeah. But some of the others were on intent to deceive, which again went to Rick Gates as the key witness.
So I think we all expected he was going to be found guilty on something. I think what I heard is he's facing somewhere between 11 and 15 years for the charges that he was found guilty on.
Right.
And he has a second trial coming up next month for basically the same charges in D.C.
Yep. So right in D.C., which is going to be less friendly, if you can say that. D.C. juries are known for being much more throw the book, you know, in these types of cases. So it'll be interesting to see. I can't recall if his attorneys have filed for change of venue, if they're still trying.
I think it's too late for that.
Okay.
I know that
was an issue at the time. So that's set and done.
It's like the second week of September. And I think that's a settled issue.
So, you know, the question was with the prosecution in this case, whether or not they were going to go back, because there was a hung jury on those other 10 charges, on whether or not to retry. And the thinking is that they're not going to now because you have this other court date coming up so quickly, so there's no use really in doing that.
And I've heard too that in this case, in this trial, they had about 300 pieces of documentary evidence. In this next case, I think they have, again, 15 counts or something like that, something about the same, and they have over 1,000.
Right.
So to your point, this is going to be a more friendly jury in an area that's going to be more hostile to Trump. This is a district that has more of a reputation of when you go down much harder.
Exactly.
And they have three times the evidence that they had in this trial. So I don't think there's no way Manafort's team could be telling him, hey, I get it. We had an outcome that was unexpected in the Virginia trial, but boy, we're going to crush it in the DC trial and you're going to walk away from this.
Right.
So he's got to be looking at more stack time, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's going to be stacked, and you know, I don't see any way that he doesn't, you know, end his life in prison at this point. I mean, with if you think about the additional time that'll come from this case, most likely, on top of you know the 8 to 12 years he'll get, you know, and the case that was just decided. You know, there's and you again, you go back to, you know, he decided, you know, not to make any type of plea deal. I mean, he, you know, forged ahead. And again, you know, and his attorneys have talked about appealing, but, you know, there's very little grounds to appeal on at all. I mean, and with how this case was handled.
So Manafort has never showed one inch of flipping on Trump, taking a deal. The fact that he separated these two cases, that even put him at a at more of a disadvantage.
No remorse. I mean, he's been...
No remorse, no nothing.
Yeah, he's kind of gone back and forth between being defiant or stoic. I mean, I think by the end of this, he was fairly stoic.
But, yeah.
Yeah, he just... There's nothing there that indicates that, you know, he's going to just back down and relent. And
so is he just going to ride this to jail for the rest of his life?
I mean, it sounds like it. We've talked about this before, but I think he's banking on a pardon from Trump, and I think that's probably what's keeping him going.
We'll get to that, but Manafort is either that character in the movies that doesn't roll on anybody, and to your point, at 69 years old, is willing to spend the rest of his life in prison, or he's waiting for the right time to flip when it's the most to his advantage,
right?
Or part three, he's waiting on the pardon.
Yeah.
I think Trump pardons Manafort, officially begin the shit show. The storm happens because a pardon
it's like
is
the
typically
floodgates opening at that point. Yeah.
No, I think there's certain things that turn the Republicans against Trump. And you've seen this one. There's no real wave of Republicans coming after Trump saying this is the straw that broke the camel's back. This is the one I can't tolerate. It's going to have to be something that directly ties him to Russian collusion. So Brandon, is there any way if he pardons Manafort, you can see that any way other than him directly obstructing the Mueller investigation?
No, I mean, not at all. It's direct interference at that point. And it completely contradicts the whole claim by Trump supporters, you know, trying to create distance between Manafort and Trump.
Yeah.
You know, saying, oh, most of this happened or started, you know, before he was involved with Trump's campaign. Well, if that's the case, why would Trump pardon him? Why is there this bond?
Yeah.
I mean, explain that. And so, again, those excuses basically don't hold up at that point at all.
Did you get upset when Trump, while the Manafort jury was still out, was basically giving interviews, tweeting, talking about what a great guy he was, how this was a railroad job for the United States,
completely.
And this was a sad day because he was being treated so badly?
Well, and he made favorable comments about Manafort going
constantly
back to the beginning of the trial. And really, he should have shut down any discussion of Manafort as soon as the trial commenced. There should have been nothing coming from him.
Absolutely.
It was completely inappropriate. And I think, again, in normal times, I mean, seeing the leader of the free world, the president, using the bully pulpit to influence basically direction of a court case involving, you know, someone close to him. I mean, it should never have happened. And there should have been more outcry over that. I mean, from the beginning, the fact that he inserted himself into the trial.
Obama got hammered for Trayvon Martin when he stepped into that. Bush did something too. I saw something where they were recounting, hey, this is activity by past presidents that when they've done this, there has been that outcry. People have said, wait a minute, you can't use your position or make these type of statements over an active trial. That's just not fair to the prosecution.
Or an active news event where we don't know all the facts. And you
absolutely
know, there's, you know, anytime the president comes out and he's very forceful with an opinion, I mean, again, that has, you know, broad influence beyond what a normal person would have.
So do you think Manafort is a direct link to collusion and conspiracy to Trump? Do you think the 3 months that he spent in that campaign, if there's somebody again, because this is just the warm-up round, the next big thing is how do we tie this to the Russian story? Do you think Paul Manafort can do that?
I think he can. I think there's so much we still don't know And we know bits and pieces. What we do know is that during the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Paul Manafort was involved in, you know, modifying the party platform to water down the resolution on Ukraine, that we would provide military assistance to Ukraine. So he became directly involved in watering that down to just express overall support rather than assistance to Ukraine. So again, you look at something like that, and I don't see how that stands alone without something else being tied to that.
That's a great point, that you can't extract that from his entire history.
Right.
Consultant for Ukraine.
Kremlin-backed interest.
Buddy to oligarchs.
Yes.
Pro-Kremlin
candidates throughout Eastern Europe. Yeah, I mean,
volunteers for the Trump. I mean, it's like, come on. Those pieces, you can't. It's like a big Erector set. They just go together naturally.
There's so many bits and
pieces. There's no way you can uncouple that.
And, you know, in turn, looking at the Russian connections there, let's look at Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen was tasked up through mid-2016, later than we initially thought, through the middle of the presidential election cycle, with cutting a deal to build Trump Tower in Moscow.
Yeah.
You know, he was heading that up. And then he later, once Trump became president, became deputy vice chairman of the RNC's finance committee. And then, you know, stepped down this past June after the revelations came out and with all the charges against him. So again, you have all of these connections there. You can't tell me that these are not puzzle pieces that fit together.
You have to suspend, you have to just
willing suspension of disbelief.
Turn your mind off. To ignore all of that. So I think both of us suspect, as most Americans suspect, Manafort, who also was at the Trump Tower meeting,
right?
He can directly make that connection. I think what we're finding out is Cohen, who was way more involved in the campaign than we thought, he has some ways to make that connection. So the thing with Manafort, he's going to have more time. He's going to get convicted in his next round. This all comes down to now is the last act of Manafort is the pardon. Is the pardon there? Is the pardon not there? And then is that something that pushes Republicans into action? The thing with Cohen is, so Cohen is getting more play right now because, again, he directly linked the president to criminal activity in a guilty plea in open court.
Well, and he has turned on the president now. I mean, he was once, you know, the president's fixer, and now he has completely done a 180, and there is no love lost there. I mean, he has basically decided that he owes the president nothing at this point.
Well, I've said that this doesn't get interesting until we hear the two words unindicted co-conspirator. Mm-hmm. We heard them yesterday. The president of the United States is basically an unindicted co-conspirator. This is part of my English falling apart. Trump is named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Michael Cohen plea deal.
Right. Now, again, Trump's critics will point to that and say, this has nothing to do with Russia collusion. This is paying off women, you know, trying to keep things quiet under wraps during the campaign. But again, it involves criminal actions, so campaign finance violations that are felony level violations.
Help me out. Is Trump the only ever unindicted co-conspirator other than Nixon?
I think so.
I can't think of one.
For sitting president, I think so. Yeah,
yeah.
And there isn't anything.
Just for some historical context for folks, we're in Nixon territory right now. We're not quite Watergate yet, but we're running up on it real fast.
We are. Yeah. I mean, we definitely are. And, you know, and the point of this is that there are so many links, so many connections. The job of Mueller is to put all those together in context within the investigation. But in the process of that, as he comes across other illegal activity, it would be negligent on his part not to prosecute that.
Absolutely. Cohen's already been subpoenaed today for the case against the Trump Foundation.
Right.
There's that thing with the fraudulent $20 million loan he took out in New York for his cab company. So there's way, way more coming down the pike with Michael Cohen. The thing where, to me, where Cohen got most of the...
And there's more recorded conversations as well. We haven't even heard
the dam is not
all of
yet
those.
Broke loose. Where where Manafort was more interesting than Cohn, Manafort to me feels like a more direct connection to everything Russian simply over what you just reviewed. And this thing right now with Cohn, with paying the women off, it's somewhat silly. I mean, this falls into your classic bucket of the cover-up is always worse than the crime.
Right.
Hey, Trump is a pig with women. He cheated on wife number three, as he's cheated on all of his wives. And to shut somebody up, he paid them hush money.
Which I don't understand because, you know, up until that point in the campaign, Trump already had a reputation
as a
womanizer, as, you know, somebody. Yeah. So why go to those lengths knowing that, you know, you could be found out and there's criminal action involved and that could become a much greater headache for you instead of just owning it like he owns everything else?
That's what I'm saying. I figured Trump would come down Trump Tower with pictures of these two women saying, guess what I just did? Or, we talked about, you know, those letters you get from obnoxious families at Christmas about how awesome they are. His letter would say, hey, once again, guess what I'm doing? And he would have mentioned it there. If this is what turns this case and starts this whole process, it's just a point again of how silly and dumb Trump is. Because of all of the things that could potentially clip you and things you're going to have to deal with, this is going to be the pull on the thread that unravels your presidency. And not only your presidency, everything about you. Trump might be that classic example of, they also talk about rising to beyond your position.
Oh, yeah.
Trump's got to be sitting there right now saying, God, if I just would have lost, everything would be so, so sweet.
I bet he is thinking that.
He's got to be.
He did expect to win. And again, I mean, his supporters wouldn't have ditched him knowing those revelations because, know who he is and everything that has come about, you know, they've shrugged off. It's not a big deal.
So let's break Trump supporters down into two categories. One is the electorate that supports him, and the second is the Democratic Party that supports him. So let's take the Democratic Party. Nobody is really broken hard yet with Trump. Lindsey Graham is kind of...
Republican Party.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham is kind of him and hawed around a little bit. There's been a couple of congressmen that have come out and said, well, you know, if this keeps going, we'll have to look at it. My favorite Republican of all time, Mitch McConnell, he's just completely absent because he simply doesn't care.
Right.
I mean, if it's not about a Supreme Court justice, Mitchell is totally useless. So as a Republican and somebody who's been in the Republican from the young Republican side and knows a little bit about the inner workings, what do you think it takes for that big pivot to happen, for that moment to where, hey, somebody, McConnell, you got to go to Trump and say, we can't have this anymore?
So I think it takes direct interference into the investigation, which entails either a pardon of a key official involved or the firing, the termination of the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, or acting out against Jeff Sessions, the AG. Yeah. So something of that nature is really what then turns things before. And again, this is all before we have any resolution, any findings that are released by Mueller himself.
Got it. Yeah.
So those were that's what has to happen for there to be, you know, a sustained, basically, you know, organized, you know, systematic effort to where they say, you know, this has to stop. This is a bridge too far.
Is my disgust for Mitch McConnell misplaced?
I don't think so. I mean, I am not a Mitch McConnell fan. I mean, he's the ultimate power player.
I'm baiting you to say something bad about Mitch McConnell because I dislike him so much.
I mean, he's been in the Senate for so long. Yeah. He's been part of that, you know, dog and pony show, The Game. And, you know, he has reconciled himself to the fact that he is going to go along to get along. And so he's not going to stand up to the president on anything.
No.
And he's content with, and we've talked about this before, you know, handing over, you know, basically what is, you know, legislative authority to the president.
Absolutely. I don't know how many times we have to keep coming back to this. When one third of the government, the legislative branch, has just decided they're not participating anymore.
Right.
The whole thing breaks down. And this is part of why Trump is not going to be impeached. He's not going anywhere. We're not going to kick him out of office. If you're on Team Dim, and God, Twitter just exploded with all of the, you know, the typical liberal Democrat, both in entertainment and in government. Just, this is it. The, you know, the process is starting. This isn't it.
No.
To what you just said, he's either got to fire somebody like Mueller or Rosenstein,
right,
or somebody has to directly connect him to Russia. And minus that, impeachment will never happen.
Exactly. There has to be direct interference in the investigation, or the outcome of the investigation has to show, you know, very credibly that there is a direct connection for something to happen. And it's also a misunderstanding of how impeachment works.
Yeah.
Impeachment is initiated in the House, and the Senate actually convicts.
Absolutely.
So assuming the Democrats gain back the House.
With a two-thirds majority.
Yeah. So the president will be tried, and so impeachment proceedings will begin, just like with former President Clinton,
like Clinton,
but then they will die in the Senate.
Absolutely.
And they won't go anywhere.
It's dying in the Senate.
And in fact, they probably won't even have the proceedings. It'll just die there rather than them even getting to a point where the Senate votes on impeachment.
No, it'll never reach a Senate vote. With McConnell there,
I don't see that happening.
Absolutely no way. And again, there is no way the Dems take the Senate. The numbers just aren't there. The states aren't there.
You know
what?
There's
just no way.
You made a good point, though, about Republicans and what it will take to get them to move. They're really having to tie themselves into all kinds of knots and pretzels and trying to, in terms of, you look at the Clinton impeachment, you know, so many Republicans are on record, you know, saying what it takes for a president to be impeached.
Like Lindsey Graham.
Right.
Like Mitch McConnell.
Well, even like former vice president or former current vice president Pence.
Mike Pence, yeah.
You know, when he was a radio show host, I mean, they have him on record saying, you know, talking about morality and if it's, you know, and that being a factor.
But that's dead, though, isn't it? I mean, the Trump presidency marks the official death of character and morality.
Well, it is, but it's a hypocrisy factor. I mean, it's, again, it gets
true.
Back to hypocrisy, and both parties are guilty of it, and people on both sides. But the more that comes out, the more difficult it becomes for many Republicans to, you know, write it off or rationalize it or attempt to dance around it. And eventually you're going to get to a point of no return. You can't do that.
So I was watching, Dave Chappelle has a new Netflix special called Tambourine. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty
funny.
And he basically was talking about that George W. Bush was so terrible, he gave us Barack Obama. He talked about, you know, George W. Bush should get like a Lifetime Achievement Essence Award because he was so bad and people had such a visceral reaction to him that the first African-American male was able to run and win the presidency. If you're on Team Dem or Team Lib, I'm almost telling you, you don't want impeachment. That is not what you want. You want Trump to sit in office for another 2.5 years and just toxify the Republican brand to the point where they've got to go back and rethink themselves. One of the worst things that could happen, if you truly want in 2020 as a Democrat to own all three branches of government, then you want President Trump to go full term. You, not only do you want him to go the whole 4 years and not want him impeached, you want America to get another dose of Trump, the campaigner. Because
right.
I think this time, if it's not Hillary that is receiving all of the bashing and all of the childish and grotesque behavior, and plus with 4 years of history behind him, don't think that's going to play this time.
No, and if Trump isn't president, I mean, you basically forego, you know, being able to litigate, you know, the past, you know, 4 years, and being able to, you know, point to everything, you know, destructive that has happened. I mean, you can still do that, but it's much less effective because that person no longer occupies the Oval Office, and so he needs to be used as the boogeyman. I mean, to really be able to gain the
absolutely
traction. Because otherwise you do not
absolutely.
Win. Big. I mean, you may make some gains here and there, but if you want the big win, I mean, he has to remain in office.
That's a great point. You're not going to sweep to all three with potentially having a supermajority in the Senate unless Trump runs. And one of the things that we've talked about, what's the fallout fell for what happened in Helsinki? What's the fallout? As it stands right now, I think the only fallout for Trump is he's going to get primaried.
Yeah.
I think that's what all of this is doing.
Yeah.
Flake, Kasich, somebody will step up. And they'll do it with the support of a lot of the Republican Party. And they'll say, enough's enough. We're going to put this guy through a primary, which would be just absolutely devastating to the Republicans across the entire political spectrum.
Agreed. And he'll get a primary opponent. The question is how strong of an opponent. So yeah. It's, you know, it all depends on that. I've watched CNN has, you know, these docu-series on the different decades, like, you know, they
the
started 80s, with like
the 70s,
yeah, 50s, yeah. Through during the 2000s. Yeah. Now the one on the first decade of the 2000s is really interesting because it culminates with the 2012 re-election of Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And they go through and they start talking about, obviously, you know, Bush's election, yeah, in 2000. And I can't remember which commentator makes the observation that American politics is reactionary primarily. It's a series of reactions. That if you look at every presidential election, it's a reaction to what happened the prior 4 years, the prior 8 years.
Yeah.
So we're constantly reacting and we're divided enough to where there's this back and forth. And so it's one reaction and then there's a change and then there's a reaction to that change and then again and it continues. And that progress happens, but it's slow progress. Because
progress just like accidentally happens.
Yeah. You know, what's that, you know, saying, you know, two steps forward, four steps backward, something like that. But I think that's really key. If you look at what has happened over the last Trump was a direct reaction in some ways to Obama, 8 years of Obama and people's perception.
So let's talk about that. And you just brought up something really interesting, the 2012 election. So I was listening to Ben Shapiro this week. I'll admit it. I listen to Ben Shapiro almost every day. He's my new favorite conservative commentator.
He's a smart guy.
Ben Shapiro brought up the whole, to what you just said, how did we get Trump?
Right.
And he linked it back to the second election of Barack Obama in 2012 and how Mitt Romney was villainized in the media and how he was betrayed and how he was directly kind of attacked. And it was that Trump is a reaction by Republicans to say, okay, we put somebody up that we felt had the character, the moral compass, the experience, and you used against him things like binders of women. Joe Biden made the comment about he wants to see black people in chains.
Or Harry Reid on the floor of the Senate speculating on his, you know, not paying taxes, which was a complete, lie.
As a Dib, I could say, while I disagreed with 90% of what Mitt Romney did from a policy perspective, as a man, as a person, I long for the days of Mitt Romney.
Well, he was competent. He would have put competent people in place.
Absolutely.
And the lovers
he had
of
the
government.
Makers and takers line.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I've always given him credit for, again, in a fit of honesty, he just said what most Republicans feel. If you are a business owner and a taxpayer and you have wealth, you create wealth that other people consume.
By the way, Hillary, you know, in the 2016 race had a similar
moment.
She came
dangerously close.
With the basket of deplorables line. I believe both of those lines happen at fundraisers. So,
yeah.
Candidates, can we dispel the notion that you say something at a private fundraiser and that's not going to get out? Because everybody has cameras now. Everybody has phones. Somebody's going to be recording you. Do not speak in the context of a private fundraiser and think that you can say something that will not come back to bite you. Think about what you're saying and how that's going
to
be.
Keep
publicly.
Your comments to 3 to 5 minutes.
Right.
Just don't. Once you get over that, you get free range. But Shapiro's point was that it was that reaction. It was how Republicans saw the way the media and Democrats treated Romney and that they were convinced Romney was going to win.
Right.
That there's no way Obama could win a second term. It was that loss, the loss combined with the treatment of Romney, that really set them in motion and partially is responsible for the reaction that got us Trump.
Well, and I hear from several Republicans, you know, we played nice for too long. We play nice and look what's happened. We need somebody who's going to be aggressive and is going to counterpunch and constantly, and that's who we need because it hasn't worked out for us.
There's some credence to
that. There is some credence to that. Anecdotally, from what I've heard from other Republicans, there's that feeling. Yeah, that's like, hey, we put up all these guys who – you know, have tried to be, you know, respectful, play by the rules, and, you know, and not go on the offense. And like, where did that get us? Screw that. We're going to try something completely different.
That is so interesting. Because from my side, I'm like, we have the first African-American president. He's coming off a legislative first term that was very successful. Mm-hmm. Like Obamacare, don't like Obamacare. At least he got something done. And this is the hippest, coolest guy we've ever had. This is Bill Clinton playing the saxophone times 10. That's what we have in office now. To me, while Romney was there was nothing wrong with Romney. He was just the most cookie cutter, stereotypical white male Republican that you guys could have nominated. From my side, when you saw that, as you just articulated, hey, we're not going to be a punching bag anymore. What I was thinking of is the only thing I thought of Mitt Romney when he was running is a joke. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. You're taking the white Mormon. I mean, Mitt Romney is a great guy. His family's great, but he just looks like he's cast as a Republican from Central Casting. It's like, there's no possible way this guy is going to win. As a Democrat, we never saw Romney as a serious contender. Maybe that's why it was easier to say some of the things like he wants to send black people to chains. The binder's full of women. Somehow that made him sexist or something, which is ridiculous.
Well, the language was so over the top and some of the stuff was just so ridiculous. And I think that's, again, you're right. I think that's kind of why we're in a scenario where we're at today, where all of a sudden now nothing matters. And so it's this whole idea that, you know, we're going to throw everything out there and, you know, not play by any, you know, rubric or any rule book in terms of what is appropriate or not appropriate. I did see a quote. It was funny about Mitt Romney. They called him the Disney presidential candidate. If, you know, if there was going to be a Disney film about a president, he would play the generic, you know, American president.
Remember when he used to wear pants? Wore jeans, yeah. Like, you know, he'd go down to the sawmill in Pennsylvania and he'd have a pair of jeans on. And you could just tell Mitt Romney looks like he was born wearing a suit.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I never looked at it from your side, that was kind of one of those points where,
that was,
wait a minute.
But I also think Democrats forget Obama came into office riding a wave of popularity, very popular. You know, the president's popularity dissipated, you know, after couple of years. And, you know, he was kind of in the standard, you know, mid-40s to, you know, low-50s range. And so, you know, that the presidential election in 2012 was up for grabs. I mean, it was neck and neck in many cases, and the lead changed over a couple times. And then Obama, I think it was like after the second debate, finally came in and held a small lead. But, you know, it wasn't a case of where he was unbeatable. I mean, it's possible too that, you know, Obama could have been defeated
It's not that he was unbeatable, but your stereotypical most Republican right. wasn't going to beat him.
No, not
if you guys would have nominated a female.
Yeah.
If you would have played some identity politics
like Nikki Haley,
other than white.
Yeah.
I agree. There was a shot for that. The second thing that happened, and that was kind of an eye opener for me, because again, I just never saw that. It's like, come on, you guys, you're kidding. It's Mitt Romney. He deserves to be made fun of. But now you're right. There was a lot of things that happened to Mitt Romney.
Do you
Romney
know what?
I
also
was not fair.
I also think, you know, President Obama in some aspects gave us President Trump, and I say that because specifically at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the jokes he made about Trump and the birth certificate, many people say, I mean, and Trump was furious. If you see his expression, like,
he
was
pissed. Well, I'll back you one up. Sarah Palin gave us Trump because Sarah Palin normalized stupid.
Well, as she normalized, the rhetoric that, you know, he used and ended up using effectively. She was the one that, you know, brought that to the forefront.
Populism started. Sarah Palin made it okay for a person seeking national office to not be to not pass the intelligence eye test to the American people. I mean, Sarah Palin was the dumbest person to ever run for the executive branch until
Trump came out. Don't know about that. I mean, she She, now, again, she was VP, so she was at the top of the ticket. Exactly. So I don't know.
I'm lumping those two together.
Oh, you're lumping them together. Okay. I was looking at, I don't know all the VP candidates going way back, so you'd have to.
Who was dumber than Palin? You've got to give me this one. I just gave you Mitt Romney was a good guy who was treated unfairly, and he shouldn't have gone through some of what he did in 2012. You got to give me Palin was the dumbest Republican to ever run.
Palin was clearly out of her league. No question. She was not. Yeah, she was not ready for that. She did not have the experience, not the knowledge.
If Palin's out of her league, Trump doesn't even know what the league is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's left the league behind.
But Sarah Palin normalized. So Trump had a fundraiser.
Yeah.
And I love it when people text out his unfiltered speeches at these things with the cameras on. This was the one where he talked about New York's taxes are so high because they don't frack to get the oil out of the ground. And you may not know this, Brandon, but New York's, the state of New York's like on a big hill, and all that oil and gas is running out of that shale down to other states, and they're getting it out.
Right up on
just
that,
an absolute. Steve Schmidt had the best line. Most of Trump speak is the ramblings of an imbecile.
Oh, yeah.
But he
look what he said about the California wildfires. He has no idea what he's talking about.
And most of these things, Sarah Palin, though, made it. She was the first one that introduced non-coherent speak at that high a level.
Yeah.
And somehow we got used to it. And now Trump has taken it to a whole new level.
Non-coherent and rambling. Yeah. That whole
non-intelligent. And she made syntax. It okay to basically say, I'm not very smart, but I'm spunky. I'm populist. I get things done. She made it all right to say, I'm like you. I didn't graduate from an Ivy League school. I graduated from a state college, middle tier, but because of my personality and my go-get-it-ness, and I'm just a tough old hockey mom, somehow that qualifies me to participate in the executive branch of the government. And then Trump spun that to, well, I'm a wealthy businessman. I can do it too.
Yeah, he took that to a whole nother level. But yeah, that was the beginnings of that. And particularly pandering and going after middle class and blue-collar America. So because that's where the McCain campaign sent her. They sent her to those battlegrounds in Ohio and Michigan. And then that was replicated and enhanced by Trump and his race.
So Obama's up by 13 points coming off the Democratic convention in Denver, where he's got the Roman pillars behind him. Right. And I'm thinking, this is done. It is over. There is no way we're going to do this. I think he was like 13 or 14 points up in the polls when Palin came on. And there was a pause moment of, this is different. This is a younger, attractive female governor who, when then you saw her speak at the convention, and it was like, this may not quite be done. Luckily, then she had to get off teleprompter, and it all fell apart at that point.
Yeah, I mean, she was great at giving speeches, and when she had to talk impromptu, that's it where didn't. Just their work.
Are
Katie
we just
Couric interview?
Are we just discounting that, or it's hard for me to say what is the lasting legacy of the Trump presidency? I think the Trump presidency is an outlier.
Yeah,
I think once he's gone, this was a bunch of things that we just talked about intersected with a bunch of issues, white demographics changing. All of these things happened, and this perfect storm happened, fueled by Clinton, a very unpopular candidate.
Right.
And you got Trump. I don't think this is going to be the norm on either side.
I don't think so. I think it's going to be a blip in the American political landscape, and you know we're going to hopefully revert back to what is normal politics for this country, and you know, not kind of sideshow that we've had.
Would you like to announce your support for Michael Avevani as Democratic presidential candidate, Brandon?
Maybe the sideshow isn't quite over yet.
Yeah.
But, something out of like a cartoon or a soap opera. I mean, that's something. Well, we have one announced candidate at least that we know of.
Well, I think to wrap up the Conan Manafort.
But hey, why not? We've determined that, you know, reality show, you know, candidates, they work, you know, and so why not have, you know, somebody, maybe Omarosa will announce.
Brandon, I watched a rally on TV last night where the President of the United States got up and basically said the country is the best that it's ever been. everything is the best. The economy is the best. Jobs are the best. We make the best steel, the best warships. If this were 1958, Trump would be on point with like everything that he says.
Right.
It's just... somebody made the comment too. Those rallies, last night's rally, you probably didn't watch it. There was no need to watch it.
I've seen enough of them. They're all the same.
It's just like saying, hey, turn on channel 360 and you can see a train wreck happen. But last night, his energy was much lower. You could tell. This is starting to take a toll, or at least yesterday had taken a toll on him. But what was really interesting, none of his base supporters, their energy was as high as it ever was. I mean, they busted out into the lock her up Hillary chant. Those rallies are just a replay of all of his old hits. Sooner or later, he's going to have to get some new material if he's going to take that on.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have to pivot at some point. I mean, if you know, the other thing to keep in mind too, I mean, if anything happens, you know, economically, and we start to see, you know, swings, you know, that's the lifeblood of these rallies. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't get into details, but he just, you know, how great the economy is, you know, he's not going to have any material at that point, because is he going to talk about?
I just don't understand how people in West Virginia can support a president who comes out and says, and I think I'm going to get close to the numbers, that since he's been president, they've created 175,000 new coal jobs. Well, the coal industry itself has come out and said there's only like 53,000 coal jobs in the entire country.
Right.
And the own coal industry predicts its own demise. And there was a big banner headline in a West Virginia newspaper, coal, it's not coming back. I just don't. How can you sit there and be so intellectually dishonest with yourself? I get it. You're trying to grab on to economic opportunity. There's other things happening in the country that aren't working your way. You feel screwed, and justifiably so.
Well, and he's giving his supporters false hope. I mean, he's just, and again, it's whether it's, you know, talking about manufacturing jobs that are coming back. I mean, he continually does this. And then ironically, if you look at alternative energy, you know, new sectors of the economy, he tries to,
poo-poos them every chance he gets.
Yeah, or he tries to take the tax breaks away for those, if you're talking about solar.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at the same time that he wants, it's like a blast from the past. It's like, we're going to only focus on these industries and sectors that are aging and, you know, going away. And we're going to completely, you know, forego, you know, the actual sectors of the economy that are growing.
Things that are going to drive us forward.
Yeah. Technology, new energy, all
so
of that.
We talk about Omarosa had it, and she held it longer, the news cycle, than we ever thought she could.
Over
and
a week.
She proved her chops. I mean, and she's not going anywhere.
No.
I mean,
she has more tapes. They'll trickle out.
You said she just bounces from branding opportunity to branding opportunity. She just got handed another great one. So there was Omarosa, and then Tuesday there was Cohn and Manafort. In the middle, there was John Brennan.
Yeah.
And the taking away of the security clearance. We didn't talk about this in warm up, so we're kind of going cold on here, but I have to kind of admit, if you use the word treason with the president, you got your security. There's no way. I did not think this uproar was coming. I didn't see this as, wait a minute, you just accused the president of the United States of treason, which is a very specific act punishable by death. And
right.
Now you didn't think there would be some type of
consequence
right. For doing that?
Well, and because it's out of the norm, too, for somebody with security clearance to come out that vocally.
Why do we even know his name? You're the former director of the CIA.
But again, I think the reason this is a broader issue now is because of the news that the administration is going to be yanking security clearances for many others. And that's what precipitated the big editorial where so many of them came out.
165 people.
Yeah, former General Petraeus and Hayden and all of these folks, you know, because that's a pretty broad group of individuals from, you know, administrations on both sides of the aisle. And so that's very telling. But it's this idea that you're going to use it as a weapon, basically weaponize security clearances
and
say, you know, don't speak out because you'll have yours yanked. I mean, in some of these cases, I think Hayden is a good example. You know, they're talking about yanking clearances from individuals who have had nothing to do with the Mueller investigation or haven't spoken out.
Yeah. So when this story broke, Brennan losing his clearance was my number three rager.
Right.
Number one was in the list of like that list of like nine people that I think Huckabee Sanders showed and all that.
Yeah.
Well, four of them were fired and your security clearance is yanked when you're fired.
Right.
So that's just a political hit list.
Yeah.
That should have been the number one issue of is it ignorance that you don't know these people, like Comey and Sally Yates don't have this, or that's just straight up a political list of the president's enemies. That to me was far more egregious than yanking.
I think that's what it is.
For calling the president treasonous.
The president, you know, acts first, thinks later, doesn't think later half the time. Yeah. So again, he puts that out there. He doesn't know who has security clearance or not, but
he
doesn't care. It's a form of intimidation. It's direct intimidation.
This is just a good
people.
Old-fashioned enemy hit list that I'm coming after.
Yeah.
That should have been the number one outrager. The second one would have been Orr from DOJ. Is it Bruce Orr?
Bruce Orr, yeah.
Bruce Orr. He's still employed. So basically, this is your de facto trial balloon for how you get somebody in the DOJ removed. You're seeing what happens here to see if you could apply this to Mueller or somebody else. That was by far way more cringeworthy and rageworthy than Brennan losing his security
Agreed.
Clearance.
And that was overshadowed by Brennan when, you know, it shouldn't have been because this is a current employee in the agency.
Absolutely.
And this type of intimidation has a direct impact on all the men and women working at the DOJ and FBI because it sends a very chilling message saying, hey, you know, if just by doing our jobs, if the president doesn't like what we're doing, we're now under threat.
Brennan got all of the press because of his past position, because of his willingness, I think, to come on
all
talk shows and
news
say
media,
something.
Yeah. He's been out there frequently.
And you knew he was going to be the attack dog. That's one of those situations where there were some serious things to consider in it. And I think mostly my side, we absolutely and totally missed this.
I think you did. You jumped all over that and you missed, you know, the real issue with, you know, war.
And come on. Is John Bolton going to call up Brennan to chew the fat over some security issue? Nobody in the Trump White House is calling Brennan.
Right.
That kind of stuff is when we've talked about for Democrats that the wind is at our back and the Republicans and Trump, you're just filling our sails just as quickly as we can unfold them. The only thing that gets us off the track is some of our own stupidity. And to me, that was one of them.
Well, the administration does this intentionally. They're good at throwing stuff out there to divert and distract. And your side seems to fall for it much
every
of the time. Yeah, instead
every
of the
time.
Key issue. It's like, oh, here's this shiny object, and then everybody goes after it.
Why can't we not just say, you know, here's the problem with that list. Oh, and the third one was Brennan got his security clearance yanked. But let's remember why.
Yeah.
And let's all start with a definition of treason. The former CIA director accusing a sitting president of treason is one of the most outrageous claims maybe in the history of this country. And I don't think I'm too far out of bounds by saying that.
No, and
you
don't
accuse the president of treason.
And you expect nothing to happen from that. And again, it's completely within the authority to and there's actually a good conversation to be had on whether or not officials should have lifetime security clearances.
Which they shouldn't.
Yeah, exactly. But not in this context, because you don't want it weaponized and you don't want it used for political purposes. But again, you have two bad actors here, I think, because Brennan is not a neutral player. And
there's
so, again, that has superseded the entire argument, though.
And come on, Brennan, the go-to move is to call him a moron.
Yeah.
Everybody does. Former secretaries of state, current thing. You could have got your point across
without
using
going
that
there. Yeah.
And we've talked about there are certain words and phrases you just shouldn't flippantly use.
No.
And treason, especially pointed to the president, is one of them. So that was a head scratcher a couple times when I saw my side just getting so worked up about that, of saying, guys, I think you're missing the overall point.
Well,
here.
It's irresponsible of someone of his caliber, because again, there's an ongoing investigation by Mueller, and we talked about Trump and other people inserting themselves in the investigation. I think when someone like Brennan makes that type of statement, they are, again, it's undue influence. It's unknowingly putting themselves when they should not be making those types of statements at all.
I agree. So let's move to the last one. And I hate if I mispronounce this person's name, I really apologize. Molly Tibbett.
Yeah.
The young lady Molly that Tibbetts. Was missing for 4 to 5 weeks mm-hmm. was found dead in Iowa. And it was a very sad conclusion to a story that over time you kept holding hope. Well, maybe she just ran off somewhere. Maybe
right.
a boyfriend, something happened, a girlfriend there in California, they're going to find her. Even though as it goes on, you kind of lose hope.
Because statistics, that's gonna happen. Once you get past, a certain point, don't look good.
And, I dropped my first kid, my daughter, at college last week. So the story about goes out for a jog and never comes home, that's especially cringeworthy if you have kids or if you have teenage kids.
Absolutely.
And the story is she was murdered, they believe, by a person who was in the country illegally.
Had been for a number of years.
He yeah. got past the E-Verify system by giving a phony social security number.
Right, I heard that.
Seemed like that's a hole that I don't know how you close that, but that seems like it's pretty easy to get past that. And where we want to go with this is yesterday when all this news broke, every channel across the board is doing, this is the lead spot. They're missing the first commercial. They're doing, 15 to 18 minutes on Cohn and Manafort. Fox News led with this story, and just if you watched any of their coverage, just absolutely not only pounded this story,
nonstop.
But poked every single sore spot in this narrative of we're being overwhelmed and our country is being taken away through illegal immigration. It was really gross if you saw any of it.
Right. And that's, and that's the issue here, because again, it feeds back into the president's narrative and something he'll hammer.
Oh.
And so it makes it very difficult to make any type of progress towards actual immigration reform. And I think most of those who are pragmatic understand that we have holes in the system. Nope. Clearly, this shows this. There's a way to address those, to have better border security, to have better checks and monitoring in place. But you also have to reform the entire system. You have to reform the adjudication process for those who enter here illegally, the family separation issue, which we've talked about so many times, DACA, which again is just something that, this Congress will not tackle.
They will not.
There are so many facets of the debate that you have to address. But unfortunately, you something like this happens and the president and his supporters will use this to typecast everybody who's coming here.
Yep.
And then you won't see any movement. I mean, it becomes a case of nothing can get done once again.
And I understand the frustration. There has to be frustration there. One amongst this poor girl's family and for people that truly want to see meaningful immigration reform, that there is an argument that this person had no legal right to be in this country. For every illegal immigrant that comes into the country that we don't remove, we're increasing the odds of something violent happening. I think that's the narrative, and the Trump team is going to take that to extreme now because they're in such bad shape politically with Cohn and Manafort.
Right.
The next 3 or 4 days, get ready for just some really kind of distasteful, I think, from the White House for coming out with how they're going to use this story to take the heat off.
I would say you'll expect to see more incendiary language, more kind of us versus them. We're being
words
invaded.
Like animals,
right.
Stuff like that. I just saw where they're already drawing a connection to say, see, we were right to separate children from their parents at the border if it prevents people like this coming over. And that's just not right.
But this reinforces the argument too that, we should be prioritizing, those that are violent and have criminal backgrounds and histories. And so we only have so much immigration enforcement capacity and resources. And so those should be directed at those with criminal records and being able to go after them. Right now we're going after everybody. We're going after, people that have, no records at all.
Yeah.
And so the question is, how effective can you be? I think we can see more of these types of cases that slip through the cracks with that type of approach, because when you have everything a priority, nothing is a priority.
And this is where we've got to find some middle ground between the two parties. The wing of my party are that wants to abolish ICE. That's ridiculous.
That's a non-starter. You cannot.
That's ridiculous.
Do that. That's not.
There was the story that made the rounds of the ICE agents who arrested the guy, the illegal immigrant who was taking his pregnant wife.
Right.
What they failed to say is that guy has a warrant for murder.
For murder.
In Mexico.
And that was in none of the news stories.
Absolutely.
And so you thought, here's just
this. They had to come back 2 days later and clean that up.
Right.
I think both sides is looking for anything to help explain its narrative.
Yeah.
If it's accurate or not, if you need context to explain it, we're not providing that. We're providing these small anecdotal instances of ICE carries away a guy driving his pregnant wife. This young woman was murdered by an immigrant, which again is horrific, but we're just really politicizing these small points. We're not looking at the bigger data set. And to what you just said, nobody in Congress is going to touch this with a 10-foot pole. Not going to happen.
And again, it's and we're going to see this, you know, continue to spiral and become worse and worse, and no action being done. And there is so much that has to be done. I mean, it really is a disaster. And we've seen complete incompetence in terms of how it's handled by the administration, by others. I mean, so again, we're just left, you know, I hate to go there and compare it to like the gun debate, but immigration has really kind of, you know, progressed like the debate with guns. You know, something happens and both sides, you know, rush
I like it that since you've been on the pod, we've not had a gun incident.
Yes.
Where we've had to spend 3 weeks talking about some horrific gun. The sad part is it's coming.
Yeah.
But that's one we haven't had.
But both of these are big issues where there's common ground to be found. There's, you know, there's laws and there's things that can be enacted tomorrow, but it's not going to happen.
I think we've both bashed on this current iteration of Congress for just giving up anything hard, anything that requires effort, anything at all might have a political consequence. So they're just turning over to the executive branch and allowing to do an executive order for. And I don't, with what happened with Cohen and Manafort and this and the political situation that Trump's in, that 2 years of gridlock we were talking about, if the Dems won the House, it just got here earlier.
Yeah.
Because nobody's making a move now. And Trump has shown, too, outside of the Democratic or outside of the tax cut, Trump isn't capable of getting a complex piece of legislation through the House and Senate. He's been a disaster in immigration, where both his own party, the leaders Graham, Ryan, and McConnell have come out and said multiple times during that process, I got no clue what he's talking about or what he wants.
Right.
The tax cut passed just because Paul Ryan he's had a boner to do that for 20 years.
And well,
it was
that was his only achievement, but you have to remember, too, this wasn't like Trump's brainchild. This was something that was thought about in the works for many years. And so the GOP, you know, basically dusted off, you know, a plan that they already had that they were ready to roll out when they had the
numbers.
Can you
see him trying to navigate a sensitive legislative issue? You've seen what he's done with DACA.
He doesn't have tolerance for details either. So he's not somebody who's detail-oriented.
And if I'm the Republicans, I'm doing nothing with him until some of this clears.
Yeah, there's no incentive to work with him until
you're not going to see
the
Republicans
gone.
Totally pull away, but they're going to put some distance, a little daylight, just to say if this all goes toes up quickly.
Well, especially now that we're in campaign season.
Yeah.
I mean, so many of them have to try to show a modicum of independence, and you know that's what you have to do.
And that's still dangerous. Trump has still proven through the last round of primaries that his endorsement or his lack of endorsement still carries weight within the Republican Party and still carries weight within the base.
Right. And so, it's this, you know, careful, dance, you know, this walk that they have to do. And, you know, because they can't turn off, you know, independent voters, but then they can't afford for Trump voters to stay home. And there's really no happy medium.
So my side right now is really got to avoid just screaming at people, why? You know, why are you still supporting this person? You've got to be kidding me. All of the mistakes we made in 2016, how stupid are you? You've got to be kidding me. Can't you see this? It feels like we're right there again, that we've learned a little, but are we going to be able to contain ourselves and use this to turn this into issues that upper Rust Belt Democrats and Midwestern Democrats that we can gravitate back to them and show them we have a plan. Or are we just going to call everybody, if you support Trump, you're an idiot, and turn that population against us again?
Yeah, I think the challenge for Democrats is not to overplay their hand and not to go too far.
Not very good at
that. and so, you know, I think they would be advised to, you know, tread cautiously.
I'm hoping that we can hold it together for the next 3 months, at least take the House. This whole Kavanaugh fight, for some reason, my side's got it into its head that what happened this week with Manafort and Cohn somehow impacts the selection of the next Supreme Court justice.
Which, again,
in our head because Mitchell one day just decided to change the rules because he got something in his head. I hate to tell you, Dems, that's not going to happen.
Well, because you're not going to have a Democrat as president for 2 more years, if possible. So,
do you really think McConnell is not going to schedule that hearing in October because Trump's political? Yeah. No,
not at all.
That's not going to happen.
Well, yeah. And again, he wants Democrats on the hot seat too. People like Claire McCaskill and John Tester in Montana and others who face, you know, challenging re-elects. Yeah. Heidi Heitkamp, you know, so he wants them to be on the record, you know, and voting for or against the nominee.
Yeah, that's a great point. They're not going to pass up that political opportunity just because you feel that Trump shouldn't be given that pick. Although it's very logical you feel that way because that's exactly what McConnell did. So this gets back to Democratic rage fueled by McConnell and Merrick Garland.
Yeah, I think the key is it has to be focused and you have to keep it, you know, at a certain level. You can't,
So we got through this pretty good without, you know, not going too far down a Manafort cone rabbit hole.
I know, and there are so many places.
And
yeah, we could
after
have
like 3 days worth of excitement. The hard part is now we'll beat this topic to death in the news for the next 4 months,
right?
Because it's going to take It's going to take almost to the end of the year till the big next turn happens. You don't think Mueller's going to magically release some report in October prior to the?
I don't think so. That would be very out of character. And I mean, he's not shown himself to be a political guy.
He's not going to.
Yeah. He's focused on the process and the results, not on the political environment.
Gotcha. That's our hour. We got anything else we need to talk about? Or are we good for the week?
I think we're good for the week.
Excellent. I'll see you next week, Brandon.
Thanks, Craig.